Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation from my flagship station, WSB in Atlanta, Georgia. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I actually want to begin this hour with a call. Don's been waiting patiently, and it's relevant to what I wanted to talk about anyway. And so here we go. Let me fire up the call from Don. Welcome to the program, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I've been waiting for you to start talking about this so we could talk about it.
All right.
Let me ask you some questions to start off with. Do you know how much it costs us to establish a 240-volt system just to charge an electric vehicle?
I am not in any way, shape, or form an electrician. I hire people to do it so I don't kill myself. So I have no idea.
Okay. Anyway, it's between $850 and $2,200 to establish a charging station. Now, that's fine for a single-family housing if they want to spend that money and do it. However, let's say you have a charging station and you live in an apartment, and you have 20 people living in that apartment, and you have 20 vehicles that want to get charged. How many recharging stations would we need?
I would imagine the apartment complex would like at least as many people as they've got living there with cars, and they're maybe going to get 20 of them out of the deal.
And who's going to pay for that?
Oh, you and I, I'm sure they're going to find a way for you and me, Don. Somehow you and I are going to get stuck with the bill.
Yeah, I agree. Now let me ask you this. Let's say you're running a commercial entity like a taxi or an Uber or even the post office. And let's say they decided to go electric. Here they are. They're out on the street and they're working and their battery or their vehicle needs recharging. They're getting paid by the hour, and they may sit there for 4 hours recharging their vehicle, not getting the job done. Does anybody consider that?
No, of course they don't. Yeah, you know, and Don, you raise a good point. I appreciate you raising these points because it gets to this great video a friend of mine sent me the other day about the efficiencies. And we may get to the point where we could convert a lot of cars into electric power, but just consider a picture in your head. Picture in your head a gallon of gasoline. Picture a gallon of gasoline in your head. Now picture 20 cans of Coca-Cola. 20 cans of Coca-Cola lined up. Those cans of Coca-Cola represent lithium-ion batteries. And you need that many to represent the same amount of power you get from 1 gallon of gasoline. Lithium-ion batteries that we use in cars, the most efficient, you need way more of them in size than that gallon of gas. Not only that, they weigh way more than that gallon of gasoline. And the result is that if you want to build an electric vehicle that powers you to get the same amount of power that you get from just a gallon of gasoline, you have to have much heavier vehicles. And you still can't get enough in, like, I've got a 25-gallon tank. It's all, I mean, when you look at the fuel cells in Teslas or the new electric F-150, those are made here in Georgia where I am. And you can't get comparable standards. You just don't. And then when you charge them, if you use the high charge capacity with the Tesla, for example, it takes 30 minutes. My buddy Clark Howard, he's a consumer affairs guy. Everybody, if you listen on a Cox dish, you know Clark. Everybody knows Clark. Wonderful guy. Great, great guy. He loves his Tesla. And he says he gets about 100 some odd miles to the gallon equivalent. And that's fantastic. And he can park. He knows where to park. He drives through where I live in Macon, Georgia. There's Tesla has some charging stations right next to a Panera Bread. And they've got some downtown in Macon as well. So you can get mugged and your kidneys taken from you while you go downtown and eat while your car is being charged. But he can do that. And God bless him, he can do that. But you know what I can do? I can take my brand new Yukon Denali. It has less than 350 miles on it now. And I can pull up at a gas station and I can fill it up in about 5 minutes. And I can drive further on that filled tank than he can drive in his Tesla. And he can say, well, it costs you more. Yeah, it costs me more, but that's my trade-off. I want to be able to hold more. I've got a big family. We pack a lot of stuff, and I can go further on my gas-driven car. You just can't do that with a gas-driven vehicle or with an electric vehicle right now. It inconveniences Americans in the name of the environment. And what good, white, well-meaning people in Washington, D.C., don't see in their bureaucratic headquarters is that while you feel good about yourself for solving the global warming problem, you're actually causing another environmental catastrophe. One, you're causing a national security issue. You're causing a national security issue because China is buying up the lithium mines around the world. So by converting us to electric power, the Biden administration is further indebting us to China. Not only is the Biden administration further indebting us to China, we're causing global pollution in poor parts of the world. But hey, white people in Hollywood need to sleep well at night knowing that they're solving the global warming problem as they pollute the rest of the planet. And you're also putting Americans out of work because you don't need as many Americans to build an electric car as you do a gas car. There are less parts. On top of all of that, though, you're essentially forcing Americans into something that they don't want. Oh, and by the way, you know what else you're doing? You're opening the door to a mileage tax, which is in the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, is a mileage tax. Because right now, federal roads are paid for with a gas tax. As more and more cars become electric, well, electric cars don't pay a gas tax because you don't put gas in them. So you're going to invade people's privacy further by getting their odometer readings so that you can charge them based on miles driven on the road. This is very much for me like the vaccine. I don't care if you get it or not. I do not care if you get a electric vehicle or not. I'll be honest, I wouldn't mind having a Tesla for piddling around town. I wouldn't mind it. I don't want it to drive from Macon, Georgia, where I live, to Atlanta, Georgia, and back. I don't want it. But for driving around town, for commuting, for taking my kids to school, sure, why not? But they're really expensive. It's about as expensive as my Yukon and holds far less and doesn't go as far. And frankly, Tesla is a company built on hype. I know the people who have their Teslas love their Teslas, but when you get down to the bottom line on Tesla, it is not a financially stable company. And it depends on these government subsidies. And what the government is deciding to do is to pick winners and losers. They are altering the marketplace. They're not allowing the free market to happen. They are altering the marketplace. And I don't think that is good, and I don't think it's sustainable. If you want an electric car, get an electric car. God bless you. Governments, if you want to give people tax credits to convert to electric cars, do it. You know, Georgia, where I live for the longest time, had a very high tax credit for converting to electric vehicles. They had a massive electric car market in Georgia for a while. And the moment the tax credits went away, guess what? The electric car market disappeared, which showed it wasn't a free market. It was a government subsidized and government manufactured market. That sort of stuff actually does matter. I want my gas. My wife doesn't want an electric motorcycle. She likes her gas-powered Harley. I wouldn't mind one for piddling around a town. But for long drives with my family, I want to spread out in my big car. And the Biden administration wants to try to force us all into it. And there's something else here that doesn't get talked about. It's also a push to curb family sizes. It's also, there is a latent backdoor to population control. It's not a conspiracy. They're actually pretty open about it. Our kids go to a Christian school, and there are a couple of families with so many kids, they drive 15 passenger vans. I'm pausing so you can digest that. 15 passenger vans. I've got a buddy of mine who has more than a dozen kids. I go to church with people who have five kids. And you know what? They can't fit in the Tesla or the Nissan Leaf. They need the Suburban. They need the Suburban to haul all their gear. They need the 15-passenger van for some of the families. And the left thinks that's gross. The left thinks that's awful. What a bunch of polluters, carbon-breathing, carbon-emitting breathers. You know what? I think large families are awesome. I wish I had a large family. We couldn't. But you have a large family, you will sustain the population. You will prop up the next generation. You will take care of the next generation. And we should be encouraging people to have families. We are in population decline in this country. And we need more families. You force people into electric vehicles that are smaller. You really destabilize and further inconvenience the ability to have a large family. Because you're not going to get the 15-passenger electric van. And the left has been open about this. I mean, there's you can hear me and say, "Oh, you're kooky on this." No, they've actually been pretty open about this. That there's no need to have large families. We should incentivize people to have smaller families, make it more difficult to have large families. And one of the ways to do that is to adjust both in your living situation, moving people into cities, you're less likely to have a large family because of space. And in your driving, force people into smaller cars, they're less likely to have a large family because you can't fit everybody in one car. It's all part of a plan for them to save the environment by reducing the number of people on the planet who environmentalists have internalized are inherently bad for the planet. They might start by holding their own breath instead of holding the rest of us hostage, but no, they don't want to do that. The phone number here is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. This hour of the program sponsored by First Liberty Building and Loan. Wherever you are in the nation, if your business needs a loan to grow, call First Liberty. They can help you. They've been doing it since the 90s. They specialize in helping businesses get bigger. We're talking large loans, six figures and higher. Don't waste their time on small stuff. They want to help you get bigger. Go to FirstLibertyGA.com, FirstLibertyGA.com. Spend 10 minutes with them. See if you're a good fit for them and they are for you. They want to help you get to yes. FirstLibertyGA.com. To the phones we go, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We're going next to Robin, a truck driver, no less. Robin, welcome to the program. You're in a battery-powered 18-wheeler, undoubtedly.
No, sir, I'm not. Thank goodness, but they do have them.
Yeah, and they have them without drivers if Tesla has their way.
Well, that's what they're working on, too. They want to do away with us drivers, but they ain't figured out exactly how to do that yet.
Yeah.
But my question is what about all the waste from making the batteries? What about all the waste? What's the life cycle of the batteries? What do you do with them when their life is ended? You just putting all that back in the ground, in the earth? That's good for the planet?
No, in fact, the Los Angeles Times actually did a study on this, that they cause an environmental problem between lead acid and lithium ion batteries. The lithium ion batteries are actually better for the environment than the lead acid batteries, but they're still not good. In fact, Wired magazine, I'm trying to find it here. Here it is. The spiraling environmental cost of our lithium battery addiction from 2018. Here's a thoroughly modern riddle. What links the battery in your smartphone with a dead yak floating down a Tibetan river? The answer is lithium, the reactive alkali metal that powers our phones. In May of 2016, hundreds of protesters threw dead fish into the streets of Tagong, a town on the eastern edge of the Tibetan plateau. They had plucked them from the waters of the Liqui River, where a toxic chemical leak from a lithium mine had wreaked havoc on the local ecosystem. There are pictures of masses of dead fish on the surface of the stream. Some eyewitnesses reported seeing cow and yak carcasses floating downstream, dead from drinking contaminated water. It was the third such incident in the space of 7 years in an area which has seen a sharp increase in mining activity from operations run by BYD, the world's biggest supplier of lithium-ion batteries for smartphones and electric cars. After the second incident, officials closed the mine. When it reopened in 2016, the fish started dying again. Lithium-ion batteries are a crucial component of efforts to clean up the planet. The battery of the Tesla Model S has 12 kilograms of lithium in it, while grid storage solutions that will help balance renewable energy would need much more. But there's a problem. As the world scrambles to replace fossil fuels with clean energy, the environmental impact of finding all the lithium required to enable the transformation has a serious issue in its own right. Quote, one of the biggest environmental problems caused by our endless hunger for the latest and smartest batteries is a growing mineral crisis, says Christina Valamaki, an analyst for Elsevier. It's true. It's a massive, massive problem, causes massive amounts of pollution, but it's not global warming, and that's the thing they care about. And honestly, if we're really honest, a lot of the environmentalists, they don't really care because it's poor people in third world countries who are impacted and not them. To the phones again we go. Charles, you are going to be next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome to the program, Charles.
Okay, yes, Eric, I appreciate you letting people get on to speak. I've got a couple of items. First one is going to electric cars, you've got to have electricity, and now parts of the country goes dark or, you know, my electricity guy just don't have it.
Right.
And the main thing I want to call in about is you always got the federal government now goes in a hole every year and has the national debt by $28 trillion mm-hmm. now.
Yep.
State of Georgia, you know, I always said, well, the state always balances the budget, which, well, they do every year. But if they don't have enough taxes come in, the state of Georgia borrows the money. Year 2021, they borrowed $1 billion. State of Georgia, in year 2022, they're going to borrow $1.1 billion. And right now, the state of Georgia is in debt for $61 billion. And the only thing they pay every year is interest on it. And that's something I don't like. I don't like my state representatives and all. And I just don't think the majority of the people know the state of Georgia is in debt $61
billion. I am Googling this right now, Charles. Thank you very much for that. Let me
Georgia debt.
Georgia debt. I got it right here. Yep. State and local government debt in Georgia from fiscal year 1999 to 20 with the forecast to 2022. Yeah, we're at 60 when you combine state and local. And a lot of it, let's see. A lot of it is bonds, it looks like. Payable bonds. Here we go, right now. The state of Georgia has a debt as of 2015 with $13 billion. They're 25th in debt, 47th in per capita debt. Total state debt owed by the 50 states was 1.15. So they're better than a lot of other states. Huh. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I'm looking at this. Yep. Debt is, a lot of it is bonds to be paid. They've got a AAA credit rating in Georgia, better than Alabama or South Carolina or most of the other states. And they're on projects that have funding coming through. So they're in debt technically, but they have the revenue stream to cover the bond. So it's kind of different than just being like the federal government. Hi there. It's Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. All right. One more call on the battery conversion. We got a Tesla owner on the line, and I want to talk to Mick about his Tesla. First of all, Mick, important question, what color did you get?
Well, we ordered it about 3 weeks ago. It won't be here till September 1 through September 30. They give you a window.
Wow.
So technically, I've paid $100 towards the Tesla. But we already got the charger. We already got the charger in the garage. And here's my only comment was that I think it doesn't have to go from 0 to 100 or, you know, from all gas to all electric. We're going to keep my BMW SUV, and it's a nice one, and it guzzles gas. I got a Fiat Spider that I waste gas in. We're going to be gas people, but my wife commutes to and from Buckhead. She spends $250 a month on gas. she spends $100 on Peach Pass, and she can't ride in the HOV lane. Now, guess what? In the Tesla, Peach Pass is free on 85 South. She can ride in the HOV lane with one person, and there's no more gas bill.
And you see, that's where I think the electric car makes sense for people in urban, suburban areas who are commuting. It's the people who, like I do, drive back and forth long distances where it doesn't. I kind of like the all of the above approach. Sounds like y'all are doing. You got gas and you got electric as well. And I think that works for me. But yeah, now, again, this is important, Nick. What color did you get?
Okay, so we are cheap when it came to this. We did the white with black interior, the standard wheels. We bought one for $39,000.
Really?
Model. You can add another 10. Yeah, $39,900 is the basic model. You can add another $10,000 to do the extended range, but that gives you another, like, less than 100 miles. I don't understand why people do it, but some people want to say they get 400 miles. And the new one gets 287 miles. And we're going to charge it every other night at home. It'll never use a supercharger. We'll never take it to Savannah. We're just going to get in the convertible or the BMW if we're going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
This is a commute car that's going to actually save me money.
Yeah, now that makes a ton of sense for something like that for those who can do it. And that's a great price point. And it, you know, so lately, I didn't realize that the white is kind of everyone I see in my neighborhood is white. And I'm like, what's going on here? We've got one guy in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you can get white for free.
Every okay.
Other color is a grand.
The brain surgeon down the street has like a dark blue one that looks sharp, and everybody else in the neighborhood has a white one. And,
oh, he paid big bucks.
Oh,
he paid big bucks.
Exactly.
Let me say this, though. I was the anti-electric car guy, you know, like some of your callers. And I used to tell people, where do you think electricity comes from? Like, it's not free. Like, you know, I was that guy. But when I looked at it for my wife only, and let me say, I'll never drive it. It has no soul. It's a screen. There's nothing anywhere in the inside of the new Tesla. There's nothing there but the screen.
Yeah.
I'll never drive it. But for her, for commuting, and now it comes with, and I'm almost done, autopilot. It comes with the free autopilot, not the self-drive. But
right.
What you used to have to pay for $3,000 or $5,000 to get in the $39,000 model, it now comes free. So literally on highway, you toggle the right turn signal, whatever it is, twice. It will drive, speed up, and stop, and steer for you. So like on a commute and bumper-to-bumper traffic, it's going to be amazing.
See, it has no soul, but I've seen and read the book, Carrie, and we know where this is headed. Or not, Carrie. What's the one? What's
hey, I love the one? You, man. Keep it up.
Yeah, well, now, hang on a second. I got to tell you one thing. Have you seen with Tesla – this is the one Tesla thing that I really would love to get. They've got the battery packs for houses that charge up. And so if the power goes off, you can rely on the batteries. That, I think, is a cool invention that I think I would like in my house, particularly during hurricane season.
Yeah, I think, though, I've looked into that. If you're going to do that, you probably need to do the solar panels, and I'm not ready for all of that.
Yeah, I got too many trees. I don't think solar panels in Atlanta. You get arrested if you cut down a tree in the Atlanta area, it seems like. So I don't know about that one, but I do love the battery packs. Listen, you enjoy the Tesla when it comes in a month or so.
My wife will.
Yes, your wife will. Yes. I'm glad your wife has a soul to make up for the car not having one. Thanks for it. Yeah, that's such a great line. The car, and it doesn't. It really doesn't. And I just, you know, Mick has the right attitude, though. If you're commuting around, I totally get the idea of having an electric car. You're like my car, my beautiful, very soulful Yukon Denali. It just roars when it comes to life. Just vroom, I love it. It gets terrible gas mileage in the city. It's four-wheel drive, and it gets terrible gas mileage in the city. But back and forth, I can drive from my house to my station is about an hour and 15 minutes. And I can make that commute twice before I fill the sucker up. It's fantastic. I love that. And I love the amount of space. Having two kids and after-school activities and all of that, meh. But for a commuter car, for your wife or yourself going back and forth to the office and being able to get to the toll lane and stuff, totally, totally makes sense. It does. It does. I'll tell you something that doesn't make sense. Cori Bush. Cori Bush is the highly progressive congresswoman from St. Louis, Missouri, who the Democrats are crediting with helping on the rent moratorium. The Democrats, whether they want to admit it or not, the Democrats have a Cori Bush problem. Let me play you this audio from Cori Bush. She was being interviewed on CBS News. Listen to this.
I'm going to make sure I have security because I know I have had attempts on my life and I have too much work to do. There are too many people that need help right now for me to allow that. So if I end up spending $200,000, if I spend $10 more dollars on it, you know what? I get to be here to do the work. So suck it up, and defunding the police has to happen. We need to defund the police and put that money into social safety.
So Cori Bush, by the way, Republicans are pouncing, according to the news. Or wait, one of the headlines, where'd this come from? I just saw it a minute ago. Oh, salivate from Politico. Republicans are salivating now. It was pounce, and then it was weaponize and seize on and grab hold of, and now it's salivating. Democrats have a Cori Bush problem. Cori Bush is the progressive Democrat from St. Louis, Missouri. On CBS News, she says she's paying for her own private security, but you need to defund the police for everybody else. Yesterday and the day before, Chuck Schumer was on the floor of the Senate thanking Cori Bush for getting the rent moratorium extended, or the eviction moratorium extended. Do you know who predominates in, so 53%, let me give you the numbers here, 53% of rental houses in this country are owned by individuals, not corporations, and not rich people. 53% are owned by members of the middle class who depend on the rental income for their livelihood. Of that 53%, half are Black or Hispanic. Half of that are Black or Hispanic. The Biden administration's reimposition of the eviction moratorium is hurting Black and Hispanic landlords. The Democrats, including Cori Bush, are attacking them as rich people, and they're not. They're in the middle class. I know multiple people who do this, and that's how they have boosted their income. I got to tell you guys, I'm not handy. I'm not. I would love to learn woodworking. I've got friends of mine who make just beautiful furniture. I'm would probably cut my hand off. I'm not handy. I hire plumbers. I hire electricians. I'm just not a handy person, and I'm willing to admit it and know I got to hire people to do this sort of stuff. I have friends of mine who are genuinely handy and they rent houses out and they do most of the work themselves. They do a lot of their own electrical work or their carpentry work. They handle the houses. They insulate the houses. They are the handyman. And they buy these houses. They and their wives fix them up and renovate them, and they rent them out to people. And they are being really hurt. They can't make the mortgages. You notice there's no mortgage foreclosure moratorium. So if they can't make the mortgage payment on these rental houses, they're losing their rental houses. But the renters who generate the income to cover the mortgage payment, they're not actually paying. And half of the people, or 53% of the people who do this, are individuals in the middle class. And of them, half of them are Black or Hispanic. And these are people who, as the Democratic Party gets more white and woke, are leaving the Democratic Party. Wokeness is a religion, whether you want to admit it or not. Wokeness is a religion. It has its own liturgies. It has its own sacraments. It has its own rites and rituals. And Black and Hispanic people tend to be socially conservative, more so than white urban liberals. And as the Democratic Party becomes a group of highly educated white urban liberals who practice this new religion, also called Episcopalianism, the Black and Hispanic members of the Democratic Party are leaving the Democratic Party. They may not become Republican, but they're leaving the Democratic Party, and they have less motivation to go vote for Democrats. And the Democratic Party, the behind the scenes, the political operatives are starting to realize this. They're starting to wonder what they can do. And that's why, by the way, that's why Democrats waited for a month before they did anything. And that's why Joe Biden came out originally and said he agreed with the White House counsel. It was unconstitutional because, one, they know it is, and, two, they know it's not actually popular. It's popular with the loudest subset of voters on the Democratic side. And this is a problem that both parties have right now that you need to understand. Both parties have a problem with being dominated by their loudest voices, and the loudest voices tend to be in the minority. Take on the Republican side, the only Trump voters. I'm not the anybody but the only Trump voters. Within the Republican Party right now, the party is still dominated by the people who only want Donald Trump in charge of the party. And they are a growing minority. They're a shrinking minority within the party. And yet they are dominating in, for example, nomination fights and things like that around the country. There are a lot of people in the party who love Donald Trump, but they're ready for the next leader of the party. They're not sure he should come back. And they're being drowned out by those who say only Trump. And the Democratic Party, it's actually the AOCs and the Cori Bushes of the world are actually the minority of the Democratic Party. The people who wanted the rental moratorium extended are the minority of the party, but they're the loudest voices. Now, the problem between the two, the Republicans and the Democrats, is that on the Democratic side, the media gives disproportionate favorable coverage to that progressive fringe in the Democratic Party, mainstreaming them in a way the media does not mainstream a Marjorie Taylor Greene on the Republican side. So voters are more likely to connect the Democratic Party to the Cori Bushes and the AOCs and the defund movement than anyone is willing to connect Republicans to Marjorie Taylor Greene or Donald Trump anymore. Trump's not on the ballot. AOC and Cori Bush are elected members of Congress. And you can say, well, Marjorie Taylor Greene is, yes. But when Marjorie Taylor Greene goes off and does that stuff, a lot of the Republicans come forward and say, she doesn't speak for me. On the Democratic side, the Democrats are too scared of their base that writes the checks to come out and publicly disagree with the Cori Bushes and the AOCs of the world. I mean, take, for example, is it Rashida Tlaib, who came out yet again with some virulently anti-Semitic remarks, and you've barely heard anyone say anything about this. Listen to this.
We also need to recognize, and this is for me as a Palestinian American, we also need to recognize, you know, as I think about my family in Palestine that continue to live under military occupation and how that really interacts with this beautiful black city I grew up in. You know, I always tell people cutting people off from water is violence. And they do it from Gaza to Detroit. And it's a way to control people, to oppress people. And it's those structures that we continue to fight against. So I know you all understand the structure we've been living under right now is designed by those that exploit the rest of us for their own profit. I always say to people, you know, I don't care if it's the issue around global human rights and our fight to free Palestine or to pushing back against those that don't believe in a minimum wage or those that believe that people have a right to health care and so much more. And I tell people, those same people, that if you open the curtain and look behind the curtain, it's the same people that make money. And yes, they do, off of racism, off of these broken policies. There is someone there making money, and you saw it. It was so exposed during the pandemic because all those structures, everything that was set up, they made record profit when we were all at having some of the most challenging, most difficult times in our lifetime at that moment. And again, they made record profit. So if anything, this pandemic's just exposed what we all have been fighting against.
The Jews, you see, the Jews are behind the scenes making money off of all of this stuff. Notice how this hasn't gotten a lot of headlines. Notice how the Democrats haven't had to denounce her. Notice how they've all kind of walked away. Nancy Pelosi wraps her arm around Ilhan Omar every time Ilhan Omar says something outrageous. That doesn't happen on the Republican side, which means it's more likely for the Democrats to be defined by their most radical members than it is the Republicans. That's just happening. You may be a Democrat and you can disagree with me, but you're disagreeing and you're wrong because it is happening. And so when Cori Bush stands up and says, well, of course I'm paying for private security, but you need to defund the police, that doesn't go well for the Democrats overall. What will go well for you guys is if you go to EdenPureDeals.com right now and you order a 3-pack of the Eden Pure Air Purifier and clean the air in your house, get rid of the tobacco odors, get rid of the pet odors, get rid of the cooking odors, get rid of the, well, I'm not allowed to talk about old people odor. I kid because I love, come on, people. Eden Pure, they really make a great air purifier. Not only that, but you can get a 3-pack. You can put one in your RV. If you got a basement, put it there. Get rid of the musty odors. The first floor, the second floor of your house, you can use it to help get rid of the black mold that's circulating, the spores in the air of your house. They really do work. They're well designed. You can hold the sucker in your hand, too. Plug it into the wall. Use a USB cord. Plug it in your car if you need it in there. If you're in a rental car and someone was smoking in the rental car ahead of time, helps clean the air. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com. You click Eric Erickson. You'll see my name on the front page. Click it. Go through and take the get three, $200 off. Click that. Put it in your cart, and there's an orange checkout button. You click it, and when you click it, you'll see a discount code. In the discount code, you put Eric3, Eric and the number 3, E-R-I-C-K-3, and you save $200. EdenPureDeals.com. You can text the word show to 33777, and you can get the podcast. You can sign up for my daily email as well. If you go to EricErickSonShow.com or EWErickson.com and click on the recipe tab, that remarkable ham sandwich recipe has been sent out, and I'm telling you, it is beyond what you think of for a ham sandwich. It is so good. It really, I got to make some. Although bourbon and cigars had to be put on hold this Sunday because I'm going to be out of town. My dad is coming in. In fact, I'll be here tomorrow, and then I'm going to leave the studio and go to the airport, pick up my dad. And he and my brothers-in-law and my cousin Jeff are coming in, and I'm taking them to a Braves game on Saturday night. Got a good seat to watch the Washington Nationals. Surely the Braves will win. They better win. They better win. I insist that they win. We'll see. Before I get out of here, you need to know that Mike Richards is someone you probably never heard of. And he is in advanced negotiations to become the permanent host of Jeopardy. And I think it's the right thing to do. He's a producer on the show. You know, they went through the celebrities. And the one thing that we know is that the celebrities, none of them were very good, including LeVar Burton. Aaron Rodgers was actually really good. But Mike Richards doesn't try to dominate the show with his personality. He's very much like Trebek, probably the closest to Trebek. I'm a big Jeopardy fan, and I think that this guy is the guy who should replace him, and it's good to know they've come up with that same decision internally.